Radio Prague News. The police are cracking down on software piracy in the biggest ever raid conducted on student campuses and institutions. The Civic Democrats are proposing a new plan which would curb abuse of the welfare system. And the West Bohemian city of Plzeň, famous for its Pilsner Urquell beer, has been named a European Capital of Culture in 2015. The police are cracking down on software pirates in the biggest ever raid conducted on student campuses and institutions around the country. A police spokeswoman said the operation had started early on Wednesday and was still underway in many parts of the country. She refused to elaborate, saying details would be disclosed on Friday at the earliest. Similar operations are reportedly taking place in other countries as well. The Civic Democratic Party has come up with a plan which would help curb abuse of the welfare system. The proposal, presented by Prime Minister Petr Nečas, entails giving all unemployed persons registered at employment offices a job offer within a month. Should they reject the offer, the state would stop paying social insurance on their behalf and they would no longer be eligible for unemployment benefits. The job offer might involve requalification, further education or community work. The West Bohemian city of Plzeň, famous for its Pilsner Urquell beer, has been named a European Capital of Culture in 2015. Sir Robert Scott, who headed a 13-member international jury of cultural professionals, said the vote had been tight, with Plzeň winning by a single vote over the other Czech candidate, the eastern city of Ostrava. The mission of the European Capital of Culture program is to reveal, showcase and develop the cultural wealth of individual European regions and to promote shared European values. The Czech Communist Youth Union may face charges for spreading lies about the Katyn massacre. On its webpage, the most radical leftist organization in the Czech Republic lays the blame for the massacre of 22,000 Polish officers at Katyn on the Nazis, perpetuating one of the biggest lies spread by the Soviet regime, which attempted to cover up the fact that the mass execution was carried out by Soviet troops at Stalin's order. Civic Democrat Senator Jiří Oberfalzer said he was determined to instigate criminal proceedings against the union. The union was banned by the Czech Interior Ministry 4 years ago after calling for a revolutionary overthrow of capitalism, but got a new lease on life in January of this year after a court ruled it did not represent a threat to democracy. And finally, a quick look at the weather forecast. The coming days should be partly cloudy with intervals of rain and shine and day temperatures between 15 and 19 degrees Celsius. The weather should improve over the weekend with daytime highs reaching 24 degrees. I'm Daniela Lazarová and that's the end of the news.
Hello, you're listening to Radio Prague, broadcasting from the Czech Republic with me, Chris Johnston. Coming up today, a new ombudsman takes over with a tough act to follow. A controversial Czech artwork which caused uproar in Brussels has found a permanent home in the city of Pilsen. And Czech footballers got off to the worst possible start in their campaign to qualify for Euro 2012. Then later in this week's Spotlight, we look at the story behind Prague's imposing National Museum. All that coming up, so stay tuned. The lower house of parliament has elected lawyer Pavel Vavarovský, the new Czech ombudsman. The former constitutional court judge was nominated by the Right of Centre coalition and says he plans to build on the work of his predecessor, the late Otakar Motyl. Jan Richter has the details.
In a second round of voting in the lower house on Tuesday, Pavel Vavarovský was elected the Czech Republic's new ombudsman, the official charged with defending people who feel wronged by the authorities. The 65-year-old lawyer and judge who for a decade served on the Constitutional Court will succeed the first-ever Czech ombudsman, Otakar Motyl, a widely respected figure who passed away 4 months ago. Speaking after his election, Mr. Varvařovský said he was planning no major changes to an office shaped by his predecessor.
I am a conservative person, and I believe that in order for the law to get into people's minds, it should not be changed at every opportunity. In very much the same way, I believe that institutions should not be changed whenever an opportunity comes along. So I think that we should continue in the way the powers of the ombudsman are set.
Pavel Varvařovský, who worked as a corporate lawyer before becoming a judge in 1992, is an expert on administrative and constitutional law. Those areas of expertise will serve him well in the new post, says Anna Šabatová, a former deputy ombudsman.
These are the two areas of law that are crucial for the institution of the ombudsman. 95% of the agenda is related to administrative law. So we'll have an expert there who can win the respect of his staff as well as the authorities. He was a corporate lawyer and, of course, served on the Constitutional Court. This is an interesting and promising combination.
There is one area, however, that the new ombudsman would like to change. In an address to the Senate 2 weeks ago, Mr. Varvařovský said the office should have the authority to petition the Constitutional Court to abolish acts, a power it now lacks. But Ms. Šabatová says this can easily change.
He could do that if it was authorized by the law, and it would be good, but he can only now ask the Constitutional Court to abolish certain legal norms, such as ministerial directives. But that can, of course, be changed by amending the Act on the Ombudsman. I personally think he should have that power because it would reinforce his authority in the society.
Pavel Varvařovský will be officially sworn in by the Speaker of the Lower House of Parliament by the end of next week.
Jan Richter with that report on the new Czech ombudsman. A controversial sculpture known as Entropa by the famous Czech artist David Černý has found a permanent home in the West Bohemian city of Plzeň. The giant artwork was unveiled this week at the Techmania Science Museum, which acquired it for 10.2 million crowns. Some will remember that Entropa caused something of a scandal last year when it was unveiled in Brussels as part of the Czech EU presidency. It offended some for the manner in which it ridiculed national stereotypes, depicting Bulgaria, for example, as a Turkish squat toilet. Since then, the controversy has abated, but there's no question Entropa remains a riveting work. Jan Velliger spoke to Techmania representative Tomáš Moravec about the acquisition.
We started to make our first steps to Entropa, so to say, 1 year ago. So actually, it's been a year. We were quite sure that we want Entropa in Plzeň, but there were some questions about the finance and about the space, because Entropa is quite large. It's a big, huge artwork in the size of roughly 16 meters, and we still are not fully done with the reconstruction in our museums. So that's why the Entropa had to be placed in the not-yet-reconstructed part of the Science Center.
That leads into my next question. What is the space like around the sculpture now? It looked like there was quite a bit of space, but how would you describe it?
If you could imagine 7,000 square meters of nothing, that's where Entropa is right now. We hope to reconstruct the other part of the Science Center in the following years, starting with January 2011, which will, of course, take some time, but today you can see Entropa through the walls or through three large windows, and you cannot come in because really the place where it's now located is not fully reconstructed.
It caused quite a scandal at the time it was unveiled. Yeah. That was when the Czech Republic headed the European Union, had the EU presidency. Do you think that the controversy, this kind of making fun of national stereotypes, that it has kind of lessened, it has grown less since the Czech Republic no longer is at the head of the EU?
I would say especially the Czechs are used to Entropa and are used to this kind of humor. We already have some reaction from abroad, from the Polish press or from the Hungarian press, and there was nothing about controversy. Most of the audience has probably forgotten already about the scandal caused last year in Brussels. Actually, it is a very special artwork. I was surprised to see the reactions of the audience to Entropa. For the citizens of Pilsen, it's a very positive reaction.
I asked because it struck me when I saw it again after a few months now that these sort of individual elements struck me as kind of cute or very playful, and it seemed much more within the realm of artistic license now.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I would like to say that in Pilsen, in our Techmania Science Center, Entropa is in its original shape, which means nothing is covered like in Brussels, where the Bulgarian exhibit has to be covered with a blanket, and other parts are in original vision of David's journey.
How important is the installation for Pilsen's bid for European City of Culture 2015?
Today, the jury will decide between Pilsen and between Ostrava. Entropa is something what you won't find in Ostrava, so we hope this artwork is very important for Pilsen and will bring its candidacy to finish.
Techmania's Tomasz Morawiec there, talking about the purchase of that massive and controversial artwork. And we'll bring you more about the result of the City of Culture selection in tomorrow's programme. The Czech Republic's footballers have got off to the worst possible start to their qualifying campaign for the 2012 European Championships, losing 1-0 to Lithuania at home on Tuesday night. That result hasn't gone down well with the fans or the Czech media, with Wednesday's papers describing the team's performance as a disgrace. Ian Willoughby was watching Tuesday's game and joins me now. Ian, was the match as bad as it sounds?
Well, it was pretty awful. The Czech soccer has been in the doldrums in recent times. The national team, as you know, failed to get to the World Cup this summer, and domestic clubs have been doing poorly in Europe. So many people were hoping that the first game of the Czechs' campaign to qualify for the next European Championship in 2 years' time could be a chance to put Czech football back on the right track. The Czechs had never conceded any points at all to Lithuania in previous encounters. Also, they were playing at the Andruv Stadium in Olomouc, which is considered a kind of lucky venue. So hopes were high, but in the end, it was a case of the same old, same old.
Yeah, I watched the game myself, and it seemed the Czechs got off to a pretty bright start. So where do you think it went wrong?
That's right, they did look quite impressive for the first 20 minutes or so. They dominated the game, but what they did wrong, I think, was failing to take advantage of goal opportunities. And then the Lithuanians scored on the break after about 25 minutes, and that seemed to stun them for a bit. They had one great chance to equalise when they were awarded a penalty about 5 minutes from half-time. But Milan Baroš, who was really woeful on Tuesday night, struck the ball poorly and it was saved by the goalkeeper. In the second half, things didn't improve very much. Again, the main problem was the Czechs' inability to convert their chances. This was a game in which the Czechs had 15 corners and the Lithuanians didn't have any, but still the Lithuanian goalkeeper was rarely tested. And again, I think the problem is that they really can't seem to score many goals.
Mm-hmm. And what's been the reaction to Tuesday's result?
Well, the Czech papers haven't been pulling their punches. They've been describing this result as a disgrace, a washout, and a slap in the face. Fans have also been frustrated. There was booing and whistling on Tuesday night. Some people were calling for the manager, Michal Bilek, to resign. Last night was his first competitive game as coach, and he became the only ever Czech manager to lose his first real game in charge. So it's fair to say that he is under some pressure.
Mm-hmm. And where does this result leave the Czechs in that qualifying group?
Well, the problem for the Czechs is that Spain are also in their group, and they're the current European champions, and of course they won the World Cup in the summer. They're clear favourites to come first in that group, which basically means that it appears that it's now between the Czechs, Lithuania and Scotland to fight over the second spot and a place in the playoffs for Euro 2012. The Czechs' next game is against Scotland in Prague next month, and if they lose that, you have to imagine that then they'd have little real chance of reaching the European Championship, and that could also mean bye-bye Bilek. So let's hope the Czechs do win that game and keep alive their chances of going to Poland and Ukraine in 2 years from now.
Thanks for that, Ian. No visitor to Prague can fail to admire the beautiful National Museum, the dominant feature atop the long boulevard of Wenceslas Square. It's home to millions of items of natural and social history. However, today's edition of Spotlight by Christian Falvey focuses not on the exhibitions inside, but on the building itself, one of the instantly recognisable landmarks of the Czech Republic.
Art historian Lubomír Sršen has the most excellent appearance of a museum employee. The elegant 60-year-old has an air of being right at home in the marble foyer of the National Museum where we met, and well he should. As one of the building's longest-serving employees, he has been caring for its artworks for nearly a third of its history. Since he was asked to prepare an exhibition for the building's 100-year anniversary in 1991, he has also become the authority on its history, and so I came to him with my many questions about the monument, beginning with what was here before it.
The new town district of Prague ended at this point. There were city walls in this area, and right where the museum is now was the new Horse Gate, which was built in the 19th century on the site of an older gate. If we face Wenceslas Square, which used to be a horse market, then behind us fields and meadows and orchards began, and the city ended. And because they had begun taking down the city walls in the late 19th century and the entry gates as well, new lots were available where the main train station and other public buildings like the National Museum were built.
The National Museum was conceived with an eye towards grandeur. It entirely closes the top of the square, where it provides a defining view of Prague. It is one of the largest buildings in Prague, 100 meters wide and almost 70 meters in height, making it taller than the small Eiffel Tower on Petrín Hill.
The reason for the size was not really how much room the museum needed. It was more about the architect's idea to create a monumental backdrop that would kind of seal the urban design of the square. When it was built, it seemed like the museum might not actually be able to make use of so much space. That is funny, because in just a few years it was bursting at the seams, and by the beginning of the 20th century, the collections couldn't even fit inside.
The National Museum is one of four particularly superb neo-Renaissance buildings in Prague, along with the National Theatre, the Rudolfinum, and the Museum of Decorative Arts. It stands out from them, though, not only with its mass, but also with the added aspect of a central pantheon of statues of great Czechs that lies directly beneath the building's large domed tower, making it not only a museum, but what Dr. Sršen describes as a kind of holy ground.
As the building was made at the end of the 19th century, at a time of revival for Czech art and culture, the museum was built with the lofty idea of paying homage to the great figures of Czech history, culture and science. And the inclusion of the Pantheon in the design was actually one of the reasons why the architect Josef Schulz won the commission. Nothing like that had been asked for, and it was by somewhat violating the restraint of neo-Renaissance architecture, with the high cupola above the Pantheon, that he won over the jury and won the tender.
In the four arches of the Pantheon are masterworks of two of the painters of the National Revival, František Ženíšek and Václav Brožík, which show defining moments of Czech erudition, the founding of Charles University, the first university north of the Alps. St. Methodius completing the Slavonic Bible, Comenius presenting his writings to the world. In this monument of Czech nationalism, there were once two marble statues of non-Czechs, those of the Austrian Emperor Franz Josef and the Empress Elizabeth, and they came straight down upon Czechoslovak independence in the first quarter of a hard century.
With its position on Wenceslas Square, this building has been a witness to everything this country has gone through in the 20th century. The museum itself is closely tied to Czech history. It saw all of the injustices and the glory, and I suppose the unhappy events were more numerous.
Americans and English, help us. We need guns. There are too many Germans.
If we begin with the Second World War, which so humiliated this country, a symbol of that was the damage of the building suffered when a bomb was dropped straight into the center of it on the 7th of May 1945. I don't know how credible it is, but it is said that it was dropped by the last German plane that flew over Prague.
The next unfortunate event to which the museum was a backdrop was the Soviet invasion of 1968. Soldiers in tanks by the statue of St. Václav showered the building with machine gun fire, apparently thinking they had been fired on. The shots can be seen on the facade today, as repairmen sealed them with stone of a different color, perhaps even purposefully, to leave a reminder. Later in the 1970s, Czech workers, as Dr. Sršen puts it, managed to damage the building on their own, when the city's metro system was being constructed.
I was working here by then, so I remember it. We heard an underground explosion during the day. We knew they were forbidden to use dynamite to make the metro tunnels, but they did it anyway because they needed to break some drilling record. They probably did break the record, but they caused immense damage. The entire left corner of the building tore off all the way to the roof, leaving a crack you could put your finger through. The whole corner of the building had to be cut off of the foundation and hydraulically lifted a bit, and then the cracks were filled. I remember that.
And it wasn't just material damage that the communists caused to the building. The National Museum could also be a prop for socialist pageantry that undermined its nationalistic dignity. In protest of the Soviet invasion, people had burnt themselves to death at the foot of the National Museum. But still there were celebrations of socialist achievements being held there, like the opening of the highway that runs past the museum on either side.
Suddenly the National Museum was cut off from the square, and we were no longer at the address Wenceslas Square 68, but the Avenue of Victorious February 74, referring to the 1948 communist coup. I remember feeling so humiliated and angry when the ceremonial opening of the highway took place in the Pantheon, to the very obliging acquiescence of the general director, who agreed with it and tolerated it.
It's important to note that the National Museum does not refer only to the main building on Wenceslas Square, but to the institution as a whole, with a great many branches, buildings, and chateaux throughout the Czech Republic. Because there were simply less historical artifacts at the end of the 19th century, and a great preponderance of manuscripts and items relating to natural science, a tradition has been maintained of the main building showcasing mainly these items, to the surprise of tourists who expect more historical exhibits. Such exhibits have been shown more frequently in recent years, and there is a window of opportunity to see them right now.
We have been planning a reconstruction ever since I came to work here. It really is needed, but everyone has always been hesitant because it means the tremendous task of moving millions of items out of the building. But last I heard, the building should be empty by the end of next year, and it should take 3 to 4 years. But deadlines always prove to be more flexible than when they are set. so those who have the opportunity to come to the museum should, while these exhibits are still here. Art historian Lubomir Sursen, ending that feature by Christian Falvey. If you want to listen again to anything you've heard in the show today, then you can at our website www.radio.cz. Please tell us if you've got any thoughts on what you've heard on the show. The postal address is Vinohradska 12, 12099, Prague 2. The address for emails is english@radio.cz. As always, everything you've heard in the programme can also be found at radio.cz. There you'll also find a huge archive of reports and features in both text and audio form. You can also sign up for a free news email and use our podcasting. We'll talk to you again tomorrow, but until then, from myself, Chris Johnston, and all of us here at Radio Prague, thanks for listening and goodbye.
Ici Radio Prague, programme en langue française des émissions internationales de la radio tchèque, onde courte. Pour bénéficier d'une agréable réception, voici la grille de nos horaires en temps universel et fréquence en kilohertz. Six heures vingt-sept. Europe de l'Ouest, 5930. 7h30, 7h57, Europe du Sud-Ouest, Afrique du Nord-Ouest, 11600. 13h30, 13h57, Afrique du Nord-Ouest, 11600. 16h30, 16h57, Europe de l'Ouest, 9740. 18h30, 18h57, Europe de l'Ouest, 5930. 22h, 22h27, Amérique du Nord, 9440. Nous vous invitons à l'écoute également sur le web. Pour cela, veuillez vous connecter au site www.radio.cz, puis choisir le français en haut de la page d'accueil. Radio Prague est aussi sur le satellite. Vous trouverez toutes les informations sur notre site internet www.radio.cz/français.